We're doing the Medrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, chapter 41, page Kuf Nun Tes in the Eshkol edition. Vayhi Kesham Achem, just after it says Mishlei Chafei Yud Gimel, Mem Shin Chafei Yud Gimel. And now we're quoting a pasuk that describes the giving of the Torah in Vayeschanan. The whole chapter has been a chapter that phenomenally describes what happened when Hashem gave us the Torah. And the chapter continues and says, God said to the Jewish people, when you hear the voice coming from the darkness. Now earlier we said that there was fire all around. It was daytime. So what does it mean the voice emanated from the darkness? ולמה ישמיע הקדוש ברוך הוא את קולו מתוך האש והחושך ולא מתוך האור? Why is it that when God is coming to give us the Torah, the voice emanates from the fire and darkness? And here the Midrash is really explaining and passing that the fire looked like darkness, meaning it was an unnatural fire that they witnessed. So they're looking at the fire, they see fire and they see darkness. And when we read these midrashim, we have to remember the Kuzari. When the Kuzari describes the giving of the Torah, he has this long description, and in the end he says, but I can't vouch for every detail. I'm not telling you this is exactly how it happened, because the psukim, although the Midrash and Chazal give us different interpretations and understandings, we have a general picture. We know there was a vision of prophecy. We know a lot about what happened at Sinai, but down to the details, well, there are points that still, if you weren't there, I mean, we don't exactly understand what happened there. We have a picture, but we don't have an exact picture. We know what we need to know from the revelation at Sinai. So the Midrash says, why is it that Hashem makes His voice heard from the fire and darkness and not from light? Lema davar dome, what is this similar? Lemelech shehaya lo astrologus, he had an astrologer. A king has an astrologer, so he knows what's going to be in the future. Vaya masib no ishan, he's marrying his son off. Vetala bechupat bno parkiyot shchorot velo parkiyot levanot. So he hangs black curtains around the chuppah. That's not such a beautiful chuppah. His son is getting married and he has black draperies all around. Amul obnei paltin. So the people in the palace, the officer said to him, Adoneinu amelech, our master, the king, in adam tolev chubat no lapachayot levanot. You know, this isn't the way most people marry off their kids. People usually hang white draperies all around. That's a sign of happiness. Black is a sign of mourning. What's going on here? Amar lahem, so he said to them, Yodea ani, I know, she'en bni mamtin et ishto al arba'in yom. I know that their marriage is going to last 40 days. And after that, he's going to cheat on her. Shelo imru l'machar stralegus lo haya yodea ma'atid l'era levno. I don't want people to say in a month's time, in 40 days, they're going to say, ah, he's such an astrologer, he didn't know how his own son's marriage was going to work out. Kacha melech ze HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the same token, the king is God. V'aben shelo elu Yisrael, and the children at the marriage is us, the Jewish people. V'akala zo HaTorah. And who's the Kala? That's the Torah. At Sinai, we're wedding the Torah via HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, by the way, you should know some Midrashim say that God is the Chasan, and we're the Kala, and the Torah is the marriage contract. That's another way that Chazal viewed it. But here Chazal say the Torah is the Kala, we're the Chasan. There's a lot to think about on that. There's a lot to think about that. We're the Kala of Hashem, but the Torah is our Kala. Chazal say that... Chazal say that a Chasan is supposed to shine on his kala. He's supposed to impart from himself on his kala. And although our relationship with the Torah is that the Torah teaches us just as a wife teaches her husband, there's also a certain responsibility of us to develop the Torah the way the oral law was given with the 13 laws of derivation. So it's a living Torah. Yeah, it's like the Torah teaches us, and at the same time, we're also supposed to work with the Torah. It's dual relationships. It's very interesting that the Medrash calls the Torah our Kala.
How do we shine on the...
Every animal, the male is beautiful to attract the female, except for the human being. Human being expects the woman to be beautiful to catch the chasm. Look at lions. The male has this beautiful mane. He has a whole bunch of things. Look at deers, ostrich, peacocks. You look throughout the animal kingdom. The male has to get the female to be interested in him. The woman, she doesn't have to do much. He's just going to chase after when there's heat going on. But the human being isn't like that. By us, the woman is supposed to be the beautiful one, and then he gives her chase. What does that say about everything? Think about it. So, back to our medrash. So the Torah is the kala, and we're the chasen. By the way, this isn't my own thought. This was my uncle told me there's a linguist who gives a class once a week about the Hebrew language, and he was discussing a few years ago the idea of kala, that klulat yofi, that kala. He brought up this idea, and then he discussed that kala represents beauty, the whole term kala. Chazal tell us that kala represents wholeness, that the kala makes the chasen whole, from the term of kol. There's a drush of Rabbi Yeshua ibn Shuid, where he discusses that the word kala comes from the word kol. She's the one that makes him whole. So then maybe that's part of the relationship with us in the Torah. We're Homo sapiens without the Torah. Yeah, but with the Torah we become whole, like the kala makes the chasen whole. Okay, back to our medrash. We got sidetracked. So again, we have the king who's an astrologer, and he figures out that his son is, the marriage is going to last 40 days. So he puts black draperies. And the Midrash began by asking, why is God talking from fire and darkness when he's giving us the Torah? Shouldn't it be fire and light? So the Midrash says, well, Hashem is represented in the mashal, in the allegory, by the king, the astrologer. And the son that's getting married is us. And the kala is the Torah. And Hashem knew that we would live up to the Ten Commandments for all of 40 days. So Hashem made it heard from the fire and darkness, an indication that Hashem was well aware of our failings. And this can be understood in so many ways. When the world was created, Hashem asked angels, should I create the world? Hashem doesn't have a board of directors, right? Hashem is teaching us something in this conversation. And the angel said, but man is not going to be perfect. And lo and behold, man is created, and he's not perfect. He sins pretty fast. The giving of the Torah is the rectification of Adam's sin. Chazal say that when Eve sinned with the serpent, so then all of humanity fell, and the Nachash etil bazu amata, he was able to put his defilement in Eve, and all of humanity was changed. And when we stood at Sinai, so Pasakazu Amatan, the Gemara says, we were able to get off whatever impact that serpent had on Eve and on all of future humanity, we were able to remove when we stood at Sinai. So in essence, we have a new beginning to the world. We have it's a new start. Hashem says, now humanity can again move forward. And yet, at the same time, Hashem says, but I know where you're headed. I know how fast you're going to be derailed. And yet, Hashem still chooses us. So, one concept we see here is that Hashem is well aware of our shortcomings. And that doesn't affect the fact that we're the chosen people, or that Hashem wants His presence down here among us. We have our shortcomings, and Hashem is aware of it, even before He gave it to us. That doesn't mean He's not disappointed when we do it, but it's sort of an expected disappointment. It's like when you're too tired to put away the chocolate cake when you go to sleep at night, and you tell yourself, the kids are going to wake up, and I'm leaving the chocolate cake on the table. And you're telling yourself, I hope they don't take it in the morning when I get there, but I know there's a very good possibility that there ain't going to be any chocolate cake when I get up in the morning. So you're disappointed when it happens, but you sort of anticipated it. So Hashem gives us the Torah from the darkness, and the Medrash does not take us the next step. What's the next step? They ask the king, the astrologer, why are you doing that? And what does the king say? So they shouldn't say, I didn't know. So what, God has to prove to us that he knew? Or maybe the point is the other way around. What did the nations always say about us? You're not the chosen people anymore. Look at you, you sinned. Comes Hashem and says, I knew they'd sin, I still chose them. Maybe the point is, Hashem says, I don't want it to be felt like, oh, they surprised me, they disappointed me. Yes, they disappointed me, they sinned, but they didn't surprise me. I knew that's where they were headed. Yeah.
So, why give it to us then? If you're building a wall, and you know that this wall is not fundamentally strong, but you keep building it, saying, hey, it'll fall over one day, I'll fix it then. When it falls over, I'll worry about it then. Most people, they'll stop and they'll fix the problem at the base of the wall, and then they'll fix it, and then they'll build it up. So why Hashem gives us the Torah when he knows we're going to sin? Why not build us up stronger and then give us the Torah?
It's an excellent question. Whenever we ask why about God, so we're at odds. How do we know? But I want to quote to you Gemara, even though this is a little off topic, you know. I'll quote to you Gemara without going into it, just food for thought. Vilo Yisrael, sorry. Wait one second, I gotta limit the search here. It's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. It says like this. Now you're going to really be bugged because I'm not solving the problem. It seems like I'm augmenting the issue, but it's at least something to think about. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, lo asu Yisrael et ha'egel, ela liten pitchon pe lebalei tshuva. The Jewish people only did the egel so that there'd be room for tshuva in the world, to give an opening for tshuva. What does that mean? Says the Gemara. Shenemal's the verse says, God says, I wish they had this level of God-fearingness throughout their days. Hashem says about the period of the Egel. Says Rashi, Klomar, Giborim Sholtim Yitzram Ayu, Velo Haya Ra'ui Leitgaber Yitzram Aleihem. They should not have been overtaken by desire. That's not the way it should have played itself out. Ela Gzerat Melech Hayta, says Rashi, they did not have free will. Hashem decreed. Now, that's not what the Gemara said. That's Rashi's Pshat in the Gemara. Okay, so you could say that's what the Gemara said. But the Gemara says they were not fit for doing the sin. Along comes Rashi and says, what that means is that it was Hashem's decree that the Yetzer Hara should overtake them, so that to leave an opening for those who want to do tshuva, masters of tshuva, because if a person sins and he says, I'm not repenting, they're never going to take me back, you know what I did? So we answer him, wait a second. Go look at what happened in the Egel. Mm-hmm. The Kala is cheating on her husband that they're not yet married half a year. And look, they did tshuva, v'nitkablu tshuva, and Hashem took them back. God says at Sinai, I wish you had this amount of years, Shamayim, your whole life. That certainly seems to indicate we were on a good level. So when we read the ego, we have to understand there's more going on in this story. We'll just finish the Gemara. V'hainu dam Rav Yochanan mishum Rashbi. This is what Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Lo David roi lo tomase. It wasn't fitting for David to do the action, which we're going to learn on Sunday, Mirtz Hashem, his sin with Bathsheba. V'lo Yisrael roin lo tomase. Nor are Israel fit for that action. Lo David roi lo tomase. About David, it says, V'libi chalal bekirbi. David says, my heart is hollow. I've overcome my foreign desires. So how can he say that? And if he says that, then how come he fell? So then, no, God wanted him to fall. V'lo Yisrael ruin lo tomase dechtiv mitem v'yal v'avam zeli ravti kol ha'emim el alam ma'asuz. The Gemara says, why'd they do it? Now we go down the base. Turn the page. L'mar lecha, to teach you, shim chata yachid, that if an individual sinned, omim lo kalach etzel yachid. We tell him, go look, there have been individuals before you who've messed up in the world. Veim chatu tzibur, and if the masses sin, the women, them, we say to them, kalach tzibur. Go look, masses have done much worse than you guys. So that's this Gemara. So I'm just saying, before we question God, we have to realize that Chazal had a totally different picture on what the godly plan was here, and we were fine, but there was something else going on here.
It's pretty disturbing.
I told you I'd leave you more disturbed than before you asked the question.
But so most of us in here.
I was so happy Moshe walked in after. I saw him walk in and I said, shoo.
So if the point of tshuva is to return.
Wait, right? Now we're going off on a bigger tangent? No, we got to get back to the medrash.
It's not such a big tangent. It's involved. If the point of tshuva is to return to Hashem, then what it sounded to you was like at Sinai, the Bnei Israel was at such a level with Hashem that they needed to sin because they were almost too perfect.
No.
So therefore, you put the stumbling block in front of them.
No. I don't think that's the idea, but I think this goes back to what we were saying about the importance of tshuva and the importance of recognizing that God gave the Torah to a mortal world with expectations that we would be mortal and we were not perfect, and Hashem wanted that we live up to the challenges of our mortality, our desires, our inclinations. Now, Hashem didn't want a world of angels because then he didn't have to create us human. And Hashem says, no, you guys have a job. So we are the purpose and the essence of what's supposed to happen in this world. Again, Hashem says, I'm prepared for disappointments, but I'm not surprised by that. Yes? Chaim Zvi?
Yeah, there wasn't room for a tshuva before?
There was. Sure there was. There was room for tshuva before, but this is like a boost to the concept of tshuva, because this teaches us, don't ever think you went worse, so bad that there's no way back. Others have done bad before you. Okay, back to our medrash. Oh boy, I opened the can of worms tonight. Okay, I understand we're going to have a lot of questions and the questions and answer. Okay, but we can try to move forward in the medrash. I'm going to try. Come on, we're almost at the end of the chapter. Review the homet. There was a guy, Yehuda Frankel, who wanted this medrash, and now he's like, no, we got to deal with that. Okay, Rav Yehuda Omer, medaber adam im chavero, when someone speaks to his friend, hu nireh v'kolo lo nireh. You see the person, you don't see his voice. You don't see the sound waves. V'Yisrael shamu kolo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'ru et hakol yotze mipe ha'gvura uvrakim uramim. And the Jewish people, they heard Hashem, and they saw the voice coming out of Hashem, thunder, lightning. Shnemar, the verse says, V'cholam ruim takolot et alapidim. The nation saw the sounds. The nation saw the flames. Can I confuse you guys a little more, or it's not fair?
Please.
Maybe it's not fair. Because I don't plan on answering, yeah, on this. But I want you guys to be aware of questions. But maybe that's not fair. You guys, can I throw at you another point to ponder? The Midrash is telling us something which we don't understand. Midrash says they saw the voice. How do you see a voice? We don't know. What they see? The letters floating, you know, like in all those cartoons, they talk about letters. Yeah. What they see? Not that. Okay? They didn't see the letters floating. They didn't see cartoons.
Probably there are people who see. What is that called when you mix sights with sights with sounds and stuff like that?
There was a whole test on using the alphabet of the Hebrew letters. And when they said it, this program, it actually the sound waves told us, it showed out the letters. Like a bet showed out the sound waves. A bet, when they did it with the regular alphabet, it was just scrambled up. Really cool. Yeah.
Okay.
I can actually show it. When you say a lot of bet,
hearing Hashem is impossible to understand also, so perhaps maybe they're just saying, like, when you say hear Hashem, it's the same thing as seeing a sound. It's like impossible things to comprehend. So they're
Okay. So that's where I want us to go. Meaning, when we started, we quoted the Kuzari. That the Kuzri, after expanding on what happened at Sinai, ends up saying, well, I'm not willing to sign that this is exactly how it played itself out, because this is an approximation. We don't have a very clear picture. And he also says, we know that there are some things we don't understand what happened there. So we have to understand that the Midrash is telling us things which we don't understand. And the verses tell us things which we don't understand. And usually in Judaism, we talk about understanding. We say, you have to understand what you're talking about. Everything's about understanding. Question. What happens when... I brought ginger today to make tea. Where I learned with the guys in the afternoon, and I offered the guys ginger. So one of the guys came over to me and said, what does it taste like? So I'm thinking, how do you describe a taste? That's an interesting question. What does it taste like? I said to him, it tastes like a spice. But you understand, that's not, what am I going to say? It doesn't taste like a lemon, it tastes like ginger. It doesn't say it's like horseradish, it tastes like ginger. I mean, sometimes you have a very clear picture of what something is, and you're going to put it into words when you know that the listener won't understand. So what are you gaining by putting it into words? You're gaining that he at least knows that you understand. Right? The Torah describes something that the Jewish people witnessed. And the Jewish people read the Torah in that generation and they understood. We look back and we read it and we say, well, what happened there? Wait a second. But the fact that the Torah says it and that generation got the Torah, so that also carries a certain amount of weight. It's like me describing what ginger tastes to him. He won't understand it necessarily, but he'll know I know what I'm talking about. So when we read these descriptions in the Torah, although we don't have a very clear picture, the Torah knew exactly what it was saying, and the Jews in that generation knew exactly what it was saying. When I was trying to describe to them the taste of ginger, the other guys around the table who tasted ginger, they knew what I was trying to say. But he didn't know what I was trying to say. Kol mitzvot shebatorah 613 mitzvot. All the mitzvot of the Torah are 613, and this is a number that appears repeatedly throughout the Midrashim. And so the Ramban, in his introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot and his commentary on the Rambam's introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot, when he says, how do we know there are 613? You know, it's only one opinion in the Gemara, and it seems to be Rabbi Samlai who's saying a Midrash. He says, well, one of the sources is the fact that the Midrashim keep repeating this number, so that's an indication that it was a given. They had this tradition, there are 613. Ushtayim shedibar kadosh bohu, two of those God said, lefichach nikret Torah, that's why it's called Torah, because the word Torah is the numerical value, minyan Torah, 611, the 611, ushtayim dibar Hashem, and two we heard from Hashem.
Why aren't those counted?
They're counted in the 613. Because the Torah is called, what does the end of prophecy say? The end of Malachi that we learn Friday morning in the Tetrei Asar. Zichru Torat Moshe. The Torah is called Moshe's Torah. Moshe didn't want it to be called Moshe's Torah. That's why Moshe didn't want to put his name in there. And Hashem told him, and then in Ha'azinu you put your name. So Moshe put it in Rashi Tevos. So if you look through Parshas Ha'azinu, you see the beginning of the paragraphs, you see the headings form out Moshe's name. But he didn't want to. And backwards, the Ha'azinu is the hey of the end of his name. And then, because Hashem said, no, every author writes his name. And Moshe said, yeah, but what am I? God says, still I want you to put your name in there. So in Ha'azinu, his name is there. The Midrash shows us. So Moshe's part, meaning the part we heard through Moshe, was 611. The other two were from Hashem. Shenemal, the verse says, Achati berukim shtayim zu shamata, God said one, but you heard two. Harei shesh meot u'shloshesle. So that's how you end up with 613. Rabbi Pinchas omer, oto ador sheshamu kolo shel hakadosh baruch hu, that generation that heard the voice of Hashem be'ar Sinai, zachu liot kemalachei asheret. They merited to be like angels. The verse, we say it in Tehillim. Right, in Shir Shal Yom, Ani amarti Elokim atem uvnei Elyon kulchem. I said you'll all be angel-like. Lo ra'ut tipat keri b'meneihem. They never had a wet dream. They never had any emission. Ve'lo mashal b'hem kol minei chinin. And they never had lice. Uv'motam lo shalta b'hem rima v'tolean. When they passed away, the vermin couldn't touch their body. Ashreim ba'olam hazeh, praised are they in this world, v'ashreim ba'olam haba, and praised are they in the world to come. V'aleim ha'katuv omer, ashreim shekacha lo. And about them, the verse says, praised is the nation that this is what Hashem did for them. Ashreim shekacha lo is talking about that generation. This Medrash also needs work. And if we want to delve a little deeper, so we can apply Maimonides to this Medrash, and Rav Sadia going to the Medrash. Maimonides says that every prophet saw his prophecy through angels. That's why the Rambam says, in our parsha, you need kruvim in the Kodesh HaKodashim, because just as a fundamental concept is the Torah inside the Aron, a fundamental concept is the kruvim, the angels that gave prophecy to every other prophet. So, every prophet speaks, gets spoken to by an angel, not directly by Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu gets spoken to directly by Hashem. Now the Midrash said that everyone of Israel heard Hashem's voice. So what happens then? Then we all become like angels. Because only angels hear from Hashem and pass it on to the prophet. Rav Sadia Gaon says that when the Pasuk says, Re'ei netatich Elohim lefaro v'aron achicha yeh nevi'echa, when Hashem said to Moshe, look, I've made you in charge of Pharaoh. Your brother Aaron is going to be your mouthpiece. So that's the simple way we understand it. Netatich Elohim leforo. The word Elohim means a potent force. You're like the judges are called Elohim. And Aaron achicha, Aaron, your brother, yenevi'echa, comes from the word niv shpatayim. He will be your mouthpiece. Says Rav Sadia Gaon, no. I've made you like an angel. I'm going to talk to you from now on. We can't say it according to Rav Saadia Gaon. That's you're now going to be like an angel because I talk straight to you. And then Aaron Achicha, your brother Aaron, he's the Navi. Because in hearing from you, anyone that hears from you, it's like hearing from an angel. That's Rav Saadia Gaon's Mahalach in the Torah from that point onward. And applying the Rambam. And Rav Saadia Gaon, we could understand the Medrash. That once the people of Israel heard Hashem, so Hashem said, okay, then you're like angels. And then that had a certain impact on them. Okay. Let's just remember what we began our learning with. What we're learning is Medrash, also known as Kabbalah. So we understand it on the simple level. The fact that there's depth, so when we grow, Amir Tz Hashem, we'll understand deeper.